through the lead column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Inside. Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk off home run. Grand slam. Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 466. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap a tough Mets-Phillies series as the Phillies get swept in the three games that they actually played by the Metropolitans. And from SB Nation's Mets site, Brian Salvatore is going to join the podcast in just a few minutes to break it all down. And we're going to play a fun little game with regard to who the best players are in the division, the National League East. So we'll do that coming up in just a few minutes. And why the offense is where you really should be focusing most of the finger pointing here for their 1-5 road trip that just wrapped up. We'll talk a little bit about Mickey Moniak joining the team and the surprising news that Adam Haseley has been removed from the roster, put on the restricted list. We'll get into that. Plus, we'll get into some of the new rules that Major League Baseball is trying out in the Atlantic League. And I'll also have your stat of the week having to do with a near-perfect game turned no-hitter that was turned in this week by a member of the Chicago White Sox. So we got lots to do here on the podcast today. So let's get right to it. But first, just wanted to remind you to check out our Hittin' Season Patreon. We've got some new tiers for you to join. I've got a new baseball card video series coming out, hoping to have some interesting guests on that. But I've got a ton of new cards to open up, and we're gonna look at some of the older cards from the junk era and crack some of those babies open and talk about some of the players. And I hope to have some other guests on in the next few days and weeks, and that'll be part of the Patreon. And of course, most of you sign up on the Patreon in order to hear Justin Clue and Chris Jones do Absolutely Hammered, the fantastic Patreon only podcast for Patreon members of Hittin' Season. Again, go to patreon.com/hittinseason to sign up there. Well, the Phillies' road issues continue. This is a long-standing trend here with this baseball team. And here in 2021, the road has not been kind to the Phillies. They lost the first three games of the Mets series. The fourth game that was supposed to be played on Thursday afternoon was rained out. So the Phillies have now lost five out of their last six games after starting the season 5-1. Their only win during this six-game road stretch, as it turned out to be, was supposed to be a seven-game road stretch, but again, the final game against the Mets was rained out. 3 in Atlanta and 3 in New York was the win against the Braves on Sunday Night Baseball on that blown call by the umpires that we were laughing about on the podcast just a few days ago. Really, when you look at this baseball team and you look at what's killing them right now, it's not the starting pitching. It's not the relief pitching. The defense, yes, is really, really hurting them at the moment. But we kind of knew that defense was going to be an issue with this team. The hope was that the offense would paper over some of the defensive issues. I mean, you can have a defensive team that's not exactly the best around if the guys are putting runs on the board. But so far, the bats have been quiet. They've scored just 9 runs in their last 5 road losses. And on the season, the Phillies have scored just 42 runs in 12 games. That's an average of 3.5 runs per game this season. I don't mean to be an analytics guy or a stats guru here, but I'm just going to tell you, 3.5 runs a game on average, not going to get it done. You're not going to be more than a .500 baseball team if that's all you're doing. The team's .295 on-base percentage through their games played on Wednesday is tied for 12th out of 15 National League teams. Their slugging percentage of .363 is 13th in the National League, and their team OPS of .658 is just 12th. Joe Girardi, manager and understatement master, said, quote, "We have a lot of guys struggling right now." Yes, you do, Joe. Basically, nobody in the lineup is hitting other than JT Realmuto. Bryce Harper admitted that after the game on Wednesday. He said the Phillies need, quote, "a sense of urgency." He noted that he needs to have better at-bats. He struck out 3 times in the series, what turned out to be the series finale on Wednesday. And he himself said JT Realmuto is the only guy doing his job at the plate right now. strikeouts are the big problem with this baseball team. They are striking out a ton. If you take the pitchers out of the equation, this note from Scott Lauber of Philly Inquirer, the Phillies have struck out 109 times in 397 plate appearances this year. That's a 27.5% strikeout rate. Entering play on Wednesday night, the league average was 24.2, so that's 3.3% higher than the league average. Last year, their strikeout rate was only 21.6%, so we have seen a jump of 6% in the team's strikeout rate from last year to this year. Overall, when you include the pitchers, the team's 28.9% strikeout rate is second worst in the National League. And their walk rate of 7.2% is also second worst. So you have a Phillies team that is displaying horrific plate discipline, right? They're not walking very much at all, and they are striking out a ton. You want to see, in order for your offense to be successful, those two things have to be flipped. You want to have the low strikeout rate and the high walk rate. Right now, the Phillies have the exact opposite. As I was doing some digging on Fangraphs, you look at some of the numbers on the batted ball statistics and on the plate discipline statistics, and one of the reasons they are striking out so much is they're among the worst teams in the National League at making contact on pitches in the strike zone. Their Z contact percentage per Fangraphs, again, this is on pitches in the strike zone, their contact percentage is just 81.1%. All right? They're also swinging at 30.9% of pitches outside the strike zone, which is tied for fifth highest in the National League. So you've got a couple different issues here. The Phillies are getting, when they get pitches in the middle of the plate, they're not hitting them. They're not making contact with those pitches. So they're missing opportunities when pitchers are in the strike zone. Now, you can feel, I think, better about that number turning around because you have a number of players on this team who have shown they're good hitters. And you would imagine that they're not going to continue to miss pitches over the plate the way that they have so far during the course of the season. The alarming statistic is the nearly 31% of pitches outside the strike zone that they're swinging at, which is tied for fifth highest in baseball, in the National League, as I just mentioned a minute ago. So what you don't want is, and what seems to be happening, is the Phillies are not doing enough damage on pitches in the strike zone early in the count, which means with two strikes, they're chasing. And that is having a big impact on the offense, and it's up and down the lineup. On Wednesday night, the Phillies struck out 14 times. That's not just a couple of guys. That's everyone in the lineup striking out. And this is not against Jacob deGrom. This is against left-hander David Peterson, who's probably the Mets' sixth starter when they've got everybody healthy. They had just three hits in the game. The only run came on a Gene Segura home run. You look at some of the other players on this team, none of them are hitting. Andrew McCutchen is hitting 139 with a 557 OPS. He looks 43, not 34 right now at the plate. And this was a worry. You heard me mention this about Andrew McCutchen, that I was concerned about McCutchen as this team's leadoff hitter. People were just kind of on cruise control with Andrew McCutchen. And since the first 2 months of the 2019 season, when he was 2 years younger and healthier, he either hasn't been able to play or he hasn't played well. And now you've got Matt Joyce making starts against right-handers. You wonder if this is going to be a platoon by the end of the season. That's not where you wanted to see Andrew McCutchen's Phillies career heading at age 34. And maybe it's definitely too soon to say that's the way this is definitely going to happen. But Andrew McCutchen looks old and slow at the plate. And so when you combine what Andrew McCutchen is doing with the horrific job the center fielders are doing, you have two-thirds of the outfield that have turned the Phillies into one of the three or four worst offensive outfields in baseball so far here during the course of the season. And some of the guys who were hot during the homestand cooled off on the road. Rhys Hoskins is now hitting just 261 with a 798 OPS. If you'll remember, at the end of the homestand, he had an OPS over 1,200. Harper also cooled off after a fast start. He's hitting just 231 on the season with a 798 OPS. We're not exactly off to the MVP caliber season that we were hoping for. I think Ronald Acuna has won that already anyway. And Alec Bohm, despite having some good moments this year, he's come through with some big hits. He's hitting just 233 on the season. So It is early, but it isn't too early to, I mean, these games, you can't throw these games away. And the Phillies, as a team, as a collective unit, are not getting the job done at the plate. And this is a team where the offense was supposed to carry them. The offense was the heartbeat of this team. They scored the fifth most runs in the National League last year. I've been getting criticized on Twitter a little bit. And hey, that's fine. You know, that's what Twitter is for. Twitter is not for complimenting people. It's for constant and relentless criticism. Where I think I compared this team to the 2008 Phillies offense with how I thought they were going to be a meat grinder for pitchers. They were going to wear pitchers down. They were going to force pitchers to throw a lot of pitches, get on base with a lot of walks. That's what they did last year. They got on base a ton. And so they brought back JT Realmuto and they brought back Didi Gregorius. And, you know, it seemed like that was the most logical course, that this was going to be a team that hit some home runs, that managed to get on base a lot and made life difficult. And we still may get there. It's been just 2 weeks, and the Phillies are going to be coming home for a couple of series against the Cardinals and Rockies, and that might be an opportunity for the offense to get back on track. But it's never early in Major League Baseball, you know? And this is kind of what Bryce Harper was alluding to. He said, I think, in his Zoom news conference after the game on Wednesday, that he hates that expression, that it's early. This was an opportunity for the Phillies to really put some distance between themselves and the rest of the National League East, because the Braves are off to a slow start, the Nationals are off to a slow start, and the Marlins are off to a predictably slow start. This was an opportunity when you race out to a 5-1 record, you know, you all of a sudden, you know, you win a series in Atlanta and you win a series in New York, and all of a sudden, after 2 weeks, maybe you have a 3 or 4 game lead on the entire division. That's a really nice way to kind of set yourself up. And we've seen teams that do well early just carry that momentum throughout the season. But after a 5-1 homestand, the team has started off 1-5 on the road. So we hope they were going to race out to a fast start. But with this team, we always have to remember that playing at Citizens Bank Park is way different than playing on the road. So I took a look at their road records the last few years. 1-5 this year. Last year, they were 9-19 on the road. In 2019, they were 36-45. And in 2018, they were 31-50. That is a combined record over the last 4 years, counting this season, of 77-119. That is a .393 winning percentage on the road. Whatever it is the Phillies are doing to prepare for road trips or road games, it's not working. Joe Girardi, as the Phillies manager, is an experienced guy. This is something a manager has to be able to figure out. Figure out, how do we get this team to play better on the road? Now, Joe Girardi, again, the only time he's had in Philadelphia were the 2 months in the pandemic shortened season last year, where they had a ton of doubleheaders during the course of the season. It was a crazy, weird, wacky season. You can't really take too much out of 2020. And there's only been 2 weeks so far here in 2021. So it is early, no matter how much Bryce Harper doesn't want to hear that. It is too early to say definitively that this is how things are going to go. But this is a baseball team that has done poorly on the road, more than you would expect them to do. You can't expect your team necessarily to play 15 games over 500 on the road. Playing on the road is more difficult than playing at home. But you should expect them to be around. If you're going to be a good team, if you're going to be a playoff team, you got to be in and around the 500 mark. You got to be a few games over 500. You can't have a .393 winning percentage on the road and expect to make the postseason. That's just, you just can't do that. So Joe Girardi, as this team's manager, has to figure out a way to reverse that trend, because this is a longstanding trend from when Gabe Kapler was here. Now it has continued on into Joe Girardi's managerial career. And it's the offense. The offense wasn't very good during the first few games in Philadelphia. It's just, but they were even worse in Atlanta and New York, and especially in the 3-game series against the Mets, in which the Mets swept the Phillies. And now the Mets own first place in the National League East, not the Phils. But the Phillies did get a break. And I don't know what this says about the 2021 season so far, that 2 weeks in, we are happiest about a rainout on Thursday. But the rainout had so many benefits for the Phillies. They avoid another Jacob deGrom start. And I know that the Mets, since 2018, have a record below 500 when Jacob deGrom starts. I still don't want to face him when you're staring down the barrel of a 4-game sweep at the hands of your division rivals. So I'm thrilled the Phillies are not facing Jacob deGrom this weekend. That they didn't have to face Jacob deGrom on Thursday. And now they also don't need a spot starter for the game on Saturday against the Cardinals. They were most likely going to have to slide Vince Velasquez into that spot and do some kind of a bullpen game. Now the Phillies can set up their rotation so that Aaron Nola gets an extra day of rest. So you have on Friday, Zach Eflin is going to start. On Saturday, it'll be Matt Moore. And on Sunday, Aaron Nola will get an extra day of rest. And then on Monday, you'll have Chase Anderson. The other thing this do is it slots Aaron Nola in between Matt Moore and Chase Anderson, your number four and your number five starters, two guys who are probably not going to pitch deeply into many games this year. You're probably not going to get more than five or six innings out of Matt Moore and Chase Anderson. And so with Aaron Nola there, he would hopefully provide you a little more length. And so you don't have to burn the bullpen quite as much on those back-to-back days. It should be a benefit to the bullpen being able to slot Aaron Nola into the spot where he's going to be. But that all being said, the rainout, it is distressing that we are so happy about a rainout, but it is a huge advantage for the Phillies. It is a break that the Phillies are catching, that the game on Thursday was rained out, but a very dissatisfying road trip wrapped up. As good as we were feeling after the Atlanta and Mets series in Philadelphia, tell lousy Phillies fans, I mean, these were just unpleasant games to watch, weren't they? Especially this week in New York. These were just wholly unpleasant games to watch. They got down early in a couple of the games, and with the way the offense is flailing at the plate, it just didn't feel like the team had any kind of a chance to come back. And so the Phillies offense needs to get back in gear and kick things up a notch as they return home for a series against what should be a good Cardinals team and a Rockies team that is rebuilding. And hopefully a little home cooking will get the Phillies bats rocking and rolling like they should be, like we expected them to here in 2021. One other big piece of news that came down this week before we get to Brian Salvatore of Amazing Avenue, the Phillies made a very interesting roster move, and they made it for a couple of different reasons. Adam Haseley, who, as you all know, has been struggling in center field, has been put on the restricted list for personal reasons. Apparently, there was some kind of conversation between Adam Haseley and Joe Girardi where it was decided that Adam Haseley would take a leave of absence from the team for personal reasons. And the restricted list means that he will not get paid and he won't accrue service time while he's away from the team. So this is obviously a pretty big deal, whatever is going on. Whenever you put a player on the restricted list, it needs to be approved by the commissioner's office. So something is going on here. There's been no reason given for Haseley's departure. I imagine if and when he comes back to the team, they'll explain it. It's none of our business, necessarily. I just hope he's okay. And, you know, if Adam Haseley is having some personal issues or whatever is going on, we just wish him the best. And I'm not going to dive into it any more than that. But the one of the other interesting things about this decision is, okay, who do you get to replace Adam Haseley? Who do you bring up? And I think just about everyone assumed that if Roman Quinn or Adam Haseley were sent down or DFA'd or whatever, that it would probably be Odubel Herrera, who was called up to play center field. But surprisingly, no. Maybe it's because the Phillies didn't want to have to make room on the 40-man. No, that's not even true either. They actually have some room on the 40-man roster. There is some wiggle room there that they could have added Odubel Herrera, but instead they decide not to go with Odubel, not to go with Scott Kingery, two guys that they are currently paying big league dollars to, but to former number one overall pick Mickey Moniak, who impressed everybody in spring training. He impressed me in spring training. He impressed a lot of you listening in spring training. We talked a lot about the fact that I was disappointed Mickey Moniak did not get more playing time in spring training. And I think we're seeing now, if he had gotten some more playing time in spring training, we would have a little bit more information right now at our fingertips to decide if Moniak is the right guy to call up in this spot. But everything Joe Girardi said, he's been hearing that his at-bats in the alternate site were probably the best out of the three. We liked what we saw in spring training, and we felt he was probably the most ready to help out. More ready than Scott Kingery. That tells you some things. This tells you a number of different things, this move, I think. Let's start off with what it tells you about Scott Kingery. It tells you that Scott Kingery is maybe more lost than we realize, that it's going to be a little while as he's down in the alternate site and as he starts playing minor league games to get the different issues that are going on with him figured out. Girardi did mention that his at-bats have been getting better, but clearly Scott Kingery is a work in progress. There is police tape wrapped around Scott Kingery as he tries to save his baseball career, really, is what's happening here. Same with Odubel Herrera. It's pretty clear to me that they either were really turned off by how he finished up his spring and haven't been impressed with his at-bats down in the alternate site, or they don't want the headache of bringing him back up. And if you've got a guy in Mickey Moniak, who again is 23 years old, it's time for him to come play in the major leagues on a regular basis. He's the former number one overall pick in the draft. Let's see what the kid's got. Because with Odubel and with Scott Kingery, we've kind of seen what's there. With Mickey Moniak, there's at least the hope that maybe there's something there that will be useful. And I was intrigued. I was excited by his spring. It's the first time Phillies fans have been able to say anything positive about Mickey Moniak since he was drafted. And maybe he'll come up and he'll make an impact. They don't need him to do too much, right? They need him to play good defense out in center field. It's one thing Roman Quinn and Adam Haseley were not doing is playing good defense out there in addition to being black holes in the number eight spot in the order. The Phillies had said they wanted to send Moniak down because they wanted him to play every day. I don't know if he's going to play every day with the Phillies, but he's going to play against right-handers, right? And that's kind of what Girardi is saying, that they're going to match him up against right-handers a lot in the early going, but they're going to need to play him against some left-handers too. And I guess it's just kind of a wait and see. See how it goes. Don't overwhelm the kid. But, you know, he's been in the minors for a while now. He's 23 years old. He bulked up in the offseason. He's been having much better at bats. Let the kid play. Let him get out there and let's see what we've got, because center field has been a huge issue for this baseball team all season long. We kind of had a feeling it would be in the spring when it wasn't clear who was going to win the job. We had speculated about Jackie Bradley Jr. joining this team. I'm still not convinced that this team's starting center fielder in August and September is on this roster. I tend to lean towards the fact that whoever is going to start in center field for this team during a pennant race is not currently on this roster. But let's see what Mickey Moniak has. Let's see if the number one overall pick can at least be a good bench bat, a good platoon bat out there in center field. Play solid defense and don't kill you at the plate. I mean, what Roman Quinn's what, 1-for-19 with 10 strikeouts this year, something like that? You can't have that at the bottom of the order, especially with the pitchers hitting now. You end up having one-third of a lineup that pitchers don't have to worry about. And right now, the entire lineup is an issue. But if the Phillies can get center field straightened out just a little bit, it would be a monstrously huge help. And the calling up of Mickey Moniak over Odubel Herrera and Scott Kingery really tells us a lot about all three guys. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to Brian Salvatore, writer from the Mets SB Nation site Amazing Avenue. He's going to talk to us about this Phillies-Mets series. And we're going to talk about the National League East a little bit, too. And we'll do a snake draft where we draft the best players in the National League East, the best position players. I'm curious to see how he ranks some of the outstanding young position players that we have in the NL East. That's all coming up next here on Hittin' Season. Well, joining me to talk a little bit more about this Phillies-Mets series is one of the really good writers over at the Mets SB Nation site, Amazing Avenue. Brian Salvatore joins us. You can follow him on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. You can also follow Amazing Avenue's Twitter feed at Amazing Avenue. Brian, welcome to Hittin' Season, man. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me. I'm very much looking forward to talking about the Mets-Phillies, although I must say, no offense to you, I wish we were watching the Mets-Phillies right now instead of recording this, but there was a rainout today.
So. Well, see, and that's the thing. Like I mentioned that in the first segment of the podcast that, and this for the Phillies fans, this is a great rainout. I mean, there are no negatives to this rainout. We miss Jacob deGrom, and we don't have to now pinch Vince Velasquez on Saturday. So we don't have to have an emergency starter in the series against the Cardinals over the weekend. And plus, it stops the bleeding from the three-game sweep at the hands of the Mets. So Phillies fans are over. I mean, it's sad that 2 weeks into the season, we're celebrating a rainout, but it's the best news we've gotten all week, Brian. So
we have to realize this is the Mets' sixth game they have missed this season. There were three from COVID and then three rainouts in the last week. So it's funny because, the Mets played very well against the Phillies this week because it's the first time they've had consistent playing time. And so, I just think it's a bummer. And the Mets are going to Colorado where it's supposed to snow tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's supposed to be
happen there.
It's supposed to be a low of 19 on Saturday.
Wow.
Like, you shouldn't play baseball in 19 degree weather.
No, absolutely not. Not unless you're playing in the Minnesota League or
independent
ball or whatever. No, for sure. And, what's been going on with the Mets this year has kind of reminded me of what the Phillies went through last year when the Marlins had the COVID outbreak and the Phillies had to sit out for, I think they missed five or six games early in the season. They had seven doubleheaders in the last 3 weeks of the season. And I think that was one of the reasons they really struggled down the stretch. So hopefully for Mets fans, you have 162 games to kind of spread this out a little bit, and it won't hit you guys quite as hard as it hit the Phillies last year. Although from a Phillies perspective, any hardship that comes to the Mets team for on a competitive basis is okay for, as far as we're concerned. I mean, just dirty pool, but you know, whatever.
So I have a question before we start, and this is very important to me.
Yeah.
Who do you consider the Phillies' number one rival?
That's a really good question. I go back and forth on the Braves and Mets. It really just, it depends on who's been giving us a harder time, I think, during the latest stretch or whatever it is. And I think lately it's been the Mets that have been giving the Phillies the harder time. Although I think if you ask most Phillies fans, I think most would say the Braves.
See, it's interesting because I think this is a very much an age thing for Mets fans. So I'm 38, so I was 18 in 2000. So the Braves are the team that kicked my team's ass all the time. Like it was all, it seemed like every time we played the Braves, we're losing. But then folks that are a little bit younger than me, they all said the Phillies because
2007 and 2008.
Exactly. And then the fans who are a little bit younger than that say the Nationals because the Nationals got good. So it's interesting sort of where that falls. But I always feel like the Phillies and the Mets don't have the sustained rivalry.
Yeah.
But when we have the rivalry, it's super intense.
Yeah, because both teams are rarely good at the same time. And I think you have that situation now, but the Braves are also right there. And I want to get into this three-team cocktail at the top of the National League East because it really is interesting. But let's talk about this series real quick. The Mets came into Philly last week and lost 2 out of 3. There was their first action of the season. So like you mentioned, after a long layoff, they may not have been as sharp as they ordinarily would have been. Then they host the Phillies this week and swept all 3 games that were played, completely shut the Phillies' bats down. And the Phillies offense has yet to get going this year. But what should Phillies fans, what should Mets fans, what should we all be taking from these first 2 series after watching these 2 teams go head to head here in the first couple weeks?
Well, you know, like you said, the Phillies missed DeGrom today, but the Phillies saw what the Mets starting pitching can do this year. You know, I think Stroman looked excellent. Marcus Stroman looked excellent on the night game of the doubleheader. I think that Taijuan Walker looked pretty strong in the day game. I thought David Peterson looked excellent last night. And so I think for Mets fans, you have to see, okay, we have a lot of talent beyond DeGrom. But sometimes you think when you have the best pitcher in baseball, everybody else kind of just falls below that. But the Mets have a substantial depth here. For the Phillies, I think what they have to look at, though, is that the Mets lineup, though potent, can be shut down. You know, the Phillies pitching held the Mets in that first series to, you know, they did not look like the offensive powerhouse they were supposed to be. And I think the first series showed how bad the Mets bullpen is. And this series, they didn't use as much bullpen. And so it was a little bit easier to hide how bad they are.
Yeah, and I was impressed with the Mets pitching this second time around. Taijuan Walker and Marcus Stroman were both very impressive. I was surprised by Peterson's outing, considering how the Phillies hit him in the first game and in the first series the first time around. And obviously, I think Peterson is probably of your starting pitchers, maybe not the strongest of what you have.
But
certainly, Taijuan Walker and Marcus Stroman have shown a history of pitching well. And when Carlos Carrasco comes back, it's going to be an even better starting rotation. And of course, Jacob DeGrom is the best pitcher on the planet.
And then Noah Syndergaard comes back a little bit after Carrasco.
Syndergaard, forgot about Syndergaard too. Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, and that's kind of what I'm wondering here too, is like, we've been talking on the Philly side of things about the offense's struggles so far, but how much of that do you think is the level of competition they've been facing? Because Atlanta has a good pitching staff and the Mets have a pretty good pitching staff.
I think the Braves pitching staff is underrated, actually. I think the Braves are going to be a very, very good team this year. I think for the Phillies, they have to look at it 2 ways. First of all, Harper's going to hit more than he's hitting now. Mm-hmm. Real Muto's going to hit more. I'm not worried about the Phillies offense. I think that part of it, like you said, is just the strength of competition. But also, you know, I mean, the Phillies had a rain out this week. It's still early in the season. And an offense always, to me, you know, they say in spring training, the hitters are always ahead of the pitchers. Mm. I always feel like once the season starts, the pitchers are way ahead of the hitters.
Yeah.
And you tend to see the offense take a while to get rolling. I mean, watching the game last night, what I was most taken by is how the Mets, the whole series, but last night, especially with Peterson, were really able to shut down Harper.
Yeah.
Now, do you find that Harper is a streakier player?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that could just be, you know, he's going through a time right now. Mm-hmm. But no, I think for the Phillies, you know, I think part of it is the tough competition they've faced so far. But I'm also not too worried about the Phillies offense. I actually think the Phillies offense is going to surprise some people. I think Gene Segura, I mean, Gene Segura is a Mets killer.
Oh, he is a Mets killer, man.
And so maybe my opinion on Segura is biased by the fact that he kills the Mets so much. But, you know, you look at that lineup up and down. I think once you guys get center field straightened out, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on who you want to be playing center field every day. Mm-hmm. I think the team will be, I think they're going to have a pretty good offensive season.
Yeah, I think that it's obviously, they've played what, 6 or 7% of the season so far. So if that's, it's still very early, but it's not too early to fall behind in the standings and to waste a good opportunity when it's presented to you and you start off 5-1, the rest of the division's under 500, the Mets haven't gotten going and you'd really like to kind of, you know, put your foot down on the pedal a little bit and accelerate away from the pack rather than let everybody come back. And so in that way, it's been a little disappointing. And I do put most of the blame on the offense thus far because they looked good in spring training and they just haven't been able to get it all together here early in the season. And center field has been an issue. Adam Haseley left the team for personal reasons this week. We don't exactly know why. Roman Quinn's, you know, he's hitting 050 something, I think, at this point. And so they bring up Mickey Moniak and, you know, I don't know that Moniak is the answer. The problem is the Phillies don't really have a great answer for center field. Odubel Herrera's at the alternate site. He wasn't very good before the suspension. You know, he was a pretty bad baseball player for the last 4 or 5 months of his career before the suspension came around. And then he looked like the same player in spring training. And then you have Scott Kingery, who I don't know if he's still dealing with COVID after effects or if swing changes messed him up or he's just his brain is full of spiders at this point. I don't know what's going on, but I don't think the Phil's center field option is on this roster right now, at least as far as like August and September is concerned. Maybe Mickey Moniak comes up, the former number one overall pick, and surprises and plays better than we think. I was calling for him to get the job out of spring training because he looked like the best center fielder on the team based on spring training. But this is also the first time in his Phillies minor league career that he's looked half decent. So you don't know if it's a mirage. You don't know what you're seeing when it happens in spring training. So I'm very excited. I'm glad it's Moniak and not Herrera and Kingery at this point because I kind of want to see something new.
Sure. And you figure if it's not working, take a chance, right? If it's not working, you know, go for somebody who might sort of the highest upside guy you have there, who also might be the highest risk. And the thing I always say to people about the minor leagues is that, you know, minor league statistics are very misleading because especially when it comes to, you know, I interviewed a pitcher one time. I forget who it was now, who said there was like an entire season where his pitching coach said, start every batter with a slider. And so, he wound up getting his slider was trying to get his slider up and going. And so he was throwing a slider the first pitch and it was getting cranked the first half of the season, just hit. And so his numbers were terrible, but by the end of the season, he had a working slider. And so, you know, what happens is the minor league numbers can we're only seeing the results. We're not seeing the process behind those results. And, you know, Dominic Smith, who's one of the Mets' best hitters right now, he was considered a bust in the minor leagues. Yeah. And didn't really come alive until he came to the majors. And so I think that you're going to see, I think you might see more than you think from Moniak just because, you know, some players don't turn it on until they get to the majors or, you know, or it's just you're seeing the stats, you're not seeing the process in the minors.
That's certainly the hope. And I think that's what Phillies fans are kind of resting their hopes on. And he's only 23, so he's still a young player. And there's hope there. I think the other, you know, Andrew McCutchen in left field, the Phillies outfield has been a wasteland as far as offensive production is concerned, because McCutchen hasn't gotten it going yet either. And so I'm less convinced that as he's aging, that he's necessarily going to just flip a switch here and turn it on from the leadoff spot, but it's been the whole order that is just not hitting right now. So,
yeah.
But I mean, as you've seen, it's still early, you know, we've played two series against each other here, Phillies and Mets. How close are these rosters, do you think? I thought coming into the season, the Phillies roster was closer to the Mets and Braves than people were giving them credit for. As you've seen them play six games now, how close do you think these two rosters are to each other?
Well, I think if you look at the, you know, kind of look at the teams in segments, I think the Phillies bullpen last year was a disaster.
Yeah.
As was the Mets. I think the Phillies bullpen this year is clearly better than the Mets bullpen. I think that the Mets starting pitching is probably better than the Phillies starting pitching. I think that the Phillies outfield and the Mets outfield can be close when it all comes to, when both teams are playing to their full potential. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that Harper and Conforto are similar players. I think that when McCutchen is on, him and Dom Smith are similar players. McCutchen's a much better outfielder, but I think Smith's a better hitter at this point in his career. Center field for the Mets is kind of a defensive wash with Nimmo, but Nimmo is having a very good offensive start to the season. I think the infield is probably close to a wash too. I think catcher, you guys have it on us. You know, the Mets didn't even really go for Real Muto. There was a lot of talk of them going after Real Muto, but they really went for him, and I don't really know why, but that is certainly to the Phillies' advantage because he is quite the catcher.
Well, and Brian McCann hurt the Phillies with a big home run in the final game of the series, so McCann's a good offensive player, but I did want to ask you about that because obviously the Phillies benefited from the Mets going with McCann off very quickly in the offseason and not waiting around. I thought we were all really surprised when that happened. How surprised were Mets fans that they decided not to stick it out and wait around for Real Muto, because we all thought he was going there?
I think we all thought that, but what I think happened was, I think the Mets felt like, all right, listen, here's the situation. We can either get McCann right now and guarantee we have somebody here, or we wait around for Real Muto, and if he doesn't go with the Mets, there was almost nobody else that they felt confident with. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they just felt like, we have other things to do this offseason. Let's get the catcher out of the way, and let's focus on, on other things. I understand that perspective, but I think if they had, the other part of this is just financially.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Would they have traded for Lindor if they signed Real Muto?
I don't know. And that's what I was just going to say. They might have traded for him, but they couldn't have extended him.
I don't think,
you know, that's a $341 million is a lot of money. And so even for Steve Cohen, that's a lot of money. So, you know, I think they needed to save on catchers so they could extend their shortstop, which is, you know, of course, the right move to make. I think Lindor is a once in a generation player for the Mets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's a better player than Real Muto. If you're going to invest big money in somebody, I do understand that aspect of it. So, we'll see how it works out as the season goes along. So, real quick, if you can rank the three teams in the NL East, and I think the Phillies, Braves, Marlins are all better than the Nationals and Marlins, and the Nationals just don't look like the same team they were a couple of seasons ago.
No, they don't.
How do you rank these three teams right now?
I'm trying to take off my homer cap here.
Because it's hard.
I want to say I think the Mets are the best team in the division. But I think the Braves, until the Braves are beaten, I think the Braves have to be number one for me. Mm-hmm. Only because, I mean, you understand. How frustrating is it that every year they call up a new player and he's better than the last guy they called up? They have this never-ending pipeline of young players.
Yeah,
I can't believe it. And so on that note, I think you have to put Washington at the top. But I would say the Mets are closer to the Braves than they are to the Phillies in terms of talent. But I'll say this. I have never done well underestimating the Phillies. Whenever I underestimate the Phillies, they tend to come back and bite me. So I would think that it's closer than people recognize.
Yeah.
But I do think it goes Atlanta, New York, Philadelphia.
I wouldn't disagree with that based on what we saw these first 2 weeks. I picked the Phillies to win the division, and that might have been a homer pick a little bit. Although I don't normally pick the Phillies to win the division unless I really feel strongly about it. And it was kind of my way of saying, I think people are maybe underestimating Philadelphia, overestimating the other teams at the top of the division, and that the rosters were closer than it appeared because of how bad the Phillies bullpen was last year. It really made things look a lot worse than it actually was. And when you looked at the rosters, I thought, you know, there's a lot of talent on all three teams. I think they're all really, really close. And that's kind of what's playing out here through the very early part of this season.
I mean, there's a very good chance that both wild cards could come from the East. I think that's less likely to happen because of how much better San Diego got in the offseason. Mm-hmm. But there's a chance that both wild cards come out of the East.
There's a chance. I think San Diego or LA has one of those, and then it's going to be, you know, a battle for second place in the East. But you're right. And these teams may beat up on each other so much that you might just have teams struggling to get over 90 wins in the National League East, too.
Right.
So that's another way that could go. I want to talk a little bit about Jacob DeGrom. The stat is so amazing. A 2.06 ERA since 2018, and the Mets are 36-42 in those 78 starts. What happens in games where when Jacob DeGrom pitches.
John, if I could tell you, I would be managing the Mets instead of sitting here on a podcast. No offense to your podcast,
yeah,
but
understand.
You know, I don't know. I mean, first of all, the guy is just unreal. He's getting better with age. He's getting his fastballs adding velocity every season. I don't know how he's doing it. I think part of it has been the Mets just bad bullpen, but there's also, I don't know if, and I'm not trying to demean the team here, but I don't know if the team goes out there and thinks, we got the best player in baseball starting today. We don't need to do anything. We're going to sit back and just watch him go. Mm-hmm. They need to be hitting for him. I mean, the fact that on Saturday he gave up a home run to Jazz Chisholm of the Marlins, and that's it. He struck out 14 over 8 innings and lost the game. Mm. You know, that shouldn't happen. That yeah. shouldn't happen. And that happens to DeGrom all the time.
Yeah.
So I think part of it might be just this idea of the offense not thinking they have to do as much because they know that DeGrom can do so much himself.
Yeah.
And I think some of it's just the bullpen being so historically bad for the last couple seasons.
Yeah. The Phillies fans had a similar thing going on with Cole Hamels and Aaron Nola yeah. at the beginning of his career. They just never seemed to score for him or found ways to blow games that Hamels was pitching really well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, last thing here before we wrap up, and this is going to take a few minutes. So that's why I wanted to give us enough time to do this. I want to do a snake draft and we'll go maybe like five rounds here. So we'll pick 10 players total. Of the 10 best players in the National League East. All right. So actually, well, let's do six rounds. That way we each have a turn, starting at the beginning and the end. So let's go with the 12 best players in the National League East, position players, because I think, in my opinion, DeGrom's the best player in the National League East. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's particularly close, but let's run down this, the National League East. And because you're the guest, I'm going to have you go first and I'll pick second and third and we'll snake it. All right.
Okay, I think I'm going to get in trouble for this pick from my Mets brethren here, but I think I'd pick Ronald Acuña.
I think you're right to do it.
First, you know, just in terms of an all-around player,
mm-hmm.
That's where I start. I start with Acuña. Yeah.
He's on another planet this year. I mean, he 40-40 is totally within the cards, and I've seen people say 50-50 season. I mean, who knows,
wow.
but probably not, but it's pretty incredible what he's doing. I'm going to go with, I get two picks here. So number two for me is Juan Soto. I think he's the closest thing we have to a Ted Williams type hitter in Major League Baseball right now from the left-hand side of the plate. He is just, he's a machine. He hits lefties. He hit righties. He never slumps. He has never had a slump in his career. Like if you look at his numbers, like his worst 10 game stretch is like a 250 average or something like, I mean, the guy never, ever, ever slumps. And he always comes through with huge hits and clutch situations. He's not the best player defensively, but he's gotten better in that mm-hmm. aspect of his game. But I think in the middle of that Washington lineup, he is so devastatingly good a hitter that he, to me, has to be number two. And for me, number three, I'm going to take Francisco Lindor at number three. I think I was going to go Freddie Freeman there, but you're talking about a premium position like shortstop, and you talk about, you know, how young he is and all the different things Lindor can do. I'm taking Lindor at number three. So who's your four and who's your five?
My four and five are going to be Freddie Freeman at four and Real Muto at five. Again, a premium position. You want somebody there who's going to be head and shoulders above the rest. And I think that there's no catcher in the National League East or in the National League that I would want over Real Muto. So he's in the pick. And then Freddie Freeman is just, I mean, he's as consistent a power hitter as we have in baseball over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years. And he just seems like he's a guy who he plays a lot. Mm-hmm. He's good on both sides of the ball. Yeah. Yeah. I would have taken Lindor in this batch, but you beat me to it. So
I beat you to it. Yeah. All right. So you pick number four, five, and I'll pick six, seven here. I'll take Bryce Harper at this point. And, you know, I still think there's more there in Bryce Harper. I wonder, will we ever see one of those Bryce Harper seasons again where you looked at him, you're like, this guy is an unstoppable force. And that's kind of what you were thinking, the Phillies were thinking when they signed him to a $330 million deal and he's just entering his prime. You think maybe he's got another year or two, an MVP type season in him. And, you know, he's been good. I think Phillies fans are very happy with the signing. You know, it may end up being in the long run, Machado would have been the better choice, but I like there are intangibles and energy that Bryce Harper brings that I really, really like that fits in perfectly with the city and the fan base. And so to me, that still was the right pick. I'm just still kind of thinking and waiting and hoping that there is an MVP season in there, or, you know, some top three MVP season lying inside Bryce Harper someplace that is just struggling to get out, but he hasn't been able to access it. And, I don't know if it's going to be this year or not. He got off to a little bit of a slow start, picked it up, and then has kind of struggled in the Mets series a little bit too. So, I'll take Bryce Harper in that spot. And so that was with the number six, and with number seven, I'll go Trey Turner. Trey Turner might be the most underrated player in the National League East. Just, he can do so many different things. He hits for high average. He steals a ton of bases. He's an unbelievably good baseball player. And because he's overshadowed by Juan Soto and Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg, and he was overshadowed by Anthony Rendon during the 2019 season, you had all these different stars on Washington. Last year and so far this season, Trey Turner has been probably the... Maybe he's been a top five player in the National League East, and we've waited too long to take him, but this feels like the right spot for him based on, and maybe he should have gone ahead of Bryce Harper. That might've been a little bit of homerism on my part, but I'll go Bryce Harper and Trey Turner. And then why don't you finish things off here with the last player in the draft here?
I've been debating which of the three Mets I was going to go with, but I think I'm going to go with Dominic Smith. I think that in terms of pure hitting, Dominic Smith is maybe the best hitter on the Mets. And that's high praise, but
yeah,
Smith, just, he uses the entire field. He can pull the ball when he needs to, but he doesn't always do that. He is, he's a terrible outfielder. He's absolutely atrocious as was on display last night. But you know, it looks like next year might be the first year of the DH in the National League, much to my chagrin. Unfortunately, I do enjoy the old style of the National League, having a pitcher hit, but you know, that's going to change. And once that happens, I think Dom Smith is going to be rightly regarded as either one of the best first basemen in baseball if Pete Alonso hits the DH, or one of the best DHs in baseball if that's where he goes. I just think his swing is so pretty, and he's just able to put the ball wherever he wants it, and he's still getting better. So yeah, that's what I'd go with.
I would have, as a Phillies fan, taken Pete Alonso or Michael Conforto over Dominic Smith, but you're a little closer to the situation. So I trust what you're telling me here, but I think Conforto always seems to play really well against the Phillies. And so he's kind of like the Gene Segura of the Mets.
Yes, absolutely.
Against Philadelphia. So Conforto is always one of those guys who just is, every time I see him play, he's raking the ball somewhere. And, you know, McNeil also is one of those hitters that just finds a way to hurt you at least once a series. You know, he's not flashy by any stretch of the imagination, but Jeff McNeil is one of those guys. I'd love to have a guy like that on my team. He's a really good player.
See, part of this, I think on my part, is recency bias, because Alonso and McNeil and Conforto have all started the year pretty cold, whereas Smith has looked much better. So I think part of that is recency bias. But look, I think that the Mets have a really solid lineup that, once everyone is clicking, is going to be pretty devastating to the National League East opponents. Sorry to the Philly fans out there.
It's going to be a dogfight all season long. I think fans are ready for that. I think baseball knows that. I think there's going to be a lot of nationally televised NL East games, because these are all good teams with lots of all-stars on them. And I think there are going to be battles all season long, but right now I think the Mets have the upper hand on the Phils, and that three-game sweep in New York has kind of left a little bit of a bitter taste in Phillies fans' mouths. So we'll see what happens the next time these two teams get together. But Brian is going to be a regular guest here on Hittin' Season whenever these two teams get together, and I'm going to join him on his podcast over at Amazing Avenue. Brian, what's the name of the podcast you do over there?
So we have five weekly shows on our network, right? The one I'm on is called Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. And it's myself and my co-host Chris McShane, and we talk about the Mets every usually Thursdays. This week will be Friday, but yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. And I have to say one last thing, which is that if the Mets had swept, if they played today and the Mets won, it would be the first time in franchise history that they swept four from Philly at home.
Is that
so?
Right?
Yeah, it's never happened. So now there's another chance in June when they play the next 4 years. There's a chance, but I think that chance might have gone away. So unfortunately, the Mets will have to wait a little while longer for that record.
Well, great stat. So make sure you're checking out Brian Salvatore and everybody over at Amazing Avenue, the Mets SB Nation site. Follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap, and also follow Amazing Avenue on Twitter at Amazing Avenue. Brian, thanks for coming on Hittin' Season, man. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Well, up next, Major League Baseball is going to try out some new rules in the Atlantic League. They've done this kind of thing before, and some of them have actually made it to big league baseball. So don't thumb your nose at this. We'll talk about what some of those rules are coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So Major League Baseball is going to do some experimenting with the Atlantic League again. It's their own little chemistry shop, isn't it? And they're going to try a couple of different things, and with really, I think, specifically aimed at getting more balls in play and improving offense here in Major League Baseball. As we have seen, this game shift from being a game where there's a lot of action on the field, there's stolen bases, there's balls being put in play, to just a ton of strikeouts throughout the game of baseball. Pitchers have the edge. No doubt about the fact, pitchers absolutely have the edge, and Major League Baseball is trying to balance that a little bit. And for anyone who is upset that Major League Baseball would change rules like defensive shifting, like the extra inning with runners, and whether you like some of these rules or not, Major League Baseball absolutely has the right to change any rule they want to help make the game more watchable and more enjoyable and more exciting. The NFL does it, the NBA does it, every league does it, but Major League Baseball has these rules in place, these sacrosanct rules that you just can't ever, I mean, you're not going to change it from three strikes to four strikes, but there are some things you can do in this game to make it better. And so Major League Baseball is going to try some things out in the Atlantic League this year. One of the things they're going to do is they're going to try moving the mound back. They're going to, you know, remember back after the year of the pitcher of 1967, they actually lowered the mound a little bit, but they didn't move it back. What Major League Baseball wants to experiment with is moving the mound back from the hallowed 60 feet 6 inches to 61 feet 6 inches. They want to move it back a foot. The reason they want to do this is because pitchers are throwing harder than ever, right? Everyone's throwing, especially on the Phillies now, so many pitchers are throwing so hard with such high velocities that the strikeout rate in Major League Baseball, hasn't just been with the Phillies, overall has skyrocketed. Everybody is striking out. Every pitcher has become a strikeout pitcher. And it makes for bad baseball. Balls are not being put into play. It's a slower game that requires more pitches per plate appearance, which makes the games drag on longer. I love baseball. I don't mind watching a 3-hour game. 3.5-hour games, 4-hour games are another story altogether. And when all you've got are tons of strikeouts, it's just, there's nothing happening on the field. And so one of the things baseball wants to do is move the mound back a foot and see whether or not just that little bit of extra time. And I think Major League Baseball calculated it's 0.02 of a second extra that hitters would get to see the ball, which, it doesn't sound like much, can actually account for thousands of fewer swings and misses over the course of an entire season. That's going to help a strikeout rate. And pitches, if you're 1 foot back, all of a sudden a 96-mile-an-hour fastball is going to look like a 93-mile-an-hour fastball. So you've got these pitchers throwing 101 miles an hour. Well, suddenly you're just going to all of a sudden look like an ordinary hard thrower instead of a legendary hard thrower. And there's just so many guys throwing that hard, Major League Baseball hitters have not been able to adjust. And it might be impossible for Major League hitters to adjust. It just might not be physically possible for them to do it without moving the mound back. Now, there has been some pushback, obviously, by some pitchers who are worried that adding an extra foot will cause injuries, will cause pitchers to overthrow, will cause pitchers to try and change their mechanics in order to make it work. But one of the things that Jason Stark mentioned in his piece in The Athletic is that there are some catchers who sit a good 3 or 4 feet behind the plate, so the pitchers are already throwing farther than 60 feet 6 inches. And there are studies that have been done that Major League Baseball is going to send around to pitchers to say, there are a number of doctors, including Dr. James Andrews, have said there's no reason to believe moving the mound back a foot will cause pitchers any additional discomfort or increase the risk of injury. So this is one of those rules I am absolutely fine with. Let's try it out in the Atlantic League. Let's see what the numbers look like, right? If the swing and miss percentage, if the strikeout percentage remains about the same, if it's not really all changed all that much, then they'll probably put it back to where it was. But my guess is you're going to see fewer strikeouts. You're going to see a lower strikeout percentage. You're going to see hitters maybe walk a little bit more because they'll have a little bit more time to watch the flight of the ball. They'll be making more contact on pitches inside the strike zone because, I mean, you really think 200th of a second is not enough to make any kind of difference. It really, really is. In Major League Baseball, these guys are good enough that 200ths of an extra 200ths of a second is a big deal. So that's the first rule that they're going to put in place, and I am all for that one. The second issue, I'm not that thrilled with, and it's called the double hook, the DH double hook. So what this is it's a way to try and please both of the universal DH people like myself, people who want the DH throughout Major League Baseball and the National League. And the traditionalists who don't want the DH, who want pitchers to hit, or who at the very least want to maintain the strategy that's involved in the National League game. When do you pull a starter? Do you pull a starter early because, you know, it's a big game, you're down by two runs, but you've got the bases loaded and the number nine spot in the order coming up with two out, and here's your chance to take the lead. So, yeah, you've got to take your starter out after four innings in order to take advantage of this opportunity. I like those situations. That's all. That is part of the fun of baseball. I'm here to tell you, it doesn't happen all that often. We remember those moments because sometimes that is where games are won and lost, but those types of moments don't happen very often in Major League Baseball games. And we've talked about that on the podcast a lot, but that's what this rule is intended to do. It's intended to allow the DH to continue in the National League and, of course, in the American League, but also to encourage that level of strategy. So here's how the rule will work. Every team gets to start the game with a designated hitter. However, once the starting pitcher leaves the game, the designated hitter is also removed from the game. So it's the double hook, the DH double hook rule. Now, this sounds great because it incentivizes managers to keep starting pitchers in longer so that they don't lose one of their best hitters at the same time. Right? So you can understand anything that keeps starting pitchers in the game more, that basically discourages managers from going to bullpen games, right? That we all agree we hate those, and we all agree that the starting pitching matchups, it's part of what makes Major League Baseball great. It's one of the reasons we love these starting pitching matchups into these duels between aces, or even duels between interesting number three and four starters. You want the starters to stay in the game as long as possible. You don't want to see games with a ton of pitching changes. This rule is designed to give managers a moment of pause before taking out a starter and saying, well, geez, if I take Matt Moore now out after four innings, then I'm going to lose my designated hitter, which maybe on that day is Bryce Harper, or maybe on that day is Rhys Hoskins or Alec Bohm. Of course, the negative aspect to that is that, well, what if your starter is struggling? What if your starter gives up seven runs in the first inning and you've got Bryce Harper at DH that day? You have to take your starter out. But then you also lose Bryce Harper. Or let's say, and I'm sure that it would not count in case of an injury, but let's say your starter gets hurt and you have to bring in a relief pitcher to relieve him. Well, maybe your DH stays in for as long as that relief pitcher can stay in, but then when that relief pitcher leaves, you'd lose your DH. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And if you get down early, let's say you get down 3-4-0 in the first inning, or you're down 5-0 after two innings and you pull your starter, and then it also forces you to pull one of your best hitters. The chance for big comebacks in baseball are going to decline significantly. If you take Bryce Harper or Rhys Hoskins or JT Realmuto or Alec Bohm out of a game when you're trailing four or five runs in the third or fourth inning, your chances of winning that game, of mounting a comeback, decrease dramatically, right? So one thing this would do is it would allow for pinch hitters. Players like Matt Stairs, historically, guys who have made a career on the bench pinch hitting for other players, those types of jobs would become valuable again. Pinch hitters last year during Universal DH were at an all-time low, and it's easy to understand why. You don't need pinch hitters as much if you're not hitting for pitchers and if you're not subbing guys in and out. You would need pinch hitters if you lose the DH after the fifth inning or the sixth inning of every game. But it also is going to basically prevent big time stars from being designated hitters. You're going to lose some guys, some really valuable bats, some really good hitters as DHs. They're just going to retire early. You're going to lose these guys. And yes, you could say, well, if they're good enough, they should play in the outfield too. And yeah, I'd like it to be sunny every day. Also, that's not how the world works, right? That's not how baseball works. I think this is a rule that is trying to change something that doesn't really need to be changed. Just make the DH universal. Did anybody, can anybody listening to this podcast say they really thought, as they were watching baseball being played last year in the National League, they thought to themselves at any time, boy, I really missed this strategy. I just don't think it crossed anybody's minds. I think everybody forgot about it. And maybe you thought about it once or twice, if at all. But it was. Did it really ruin the game for you? No, I don't think it did at all. And now, unfortunately, we have to watch pitchers hit again. We have to watch at the bottom of the lineup how there's going to be basically two or three guys instead of a lineup that just that's fun to watch. You got to watch Aaron Nola hit, and the Zach Wheeler game was fun earlier this year. But you don't want to have to watch Zach Wheeler hit. You don't want to have to watch Matt Moore hit, right? You want to watch good hitters hit. I want to watch good hitters hit. And this is a rule that solves a problem that doesn't really need solving, in my opinion. So I'm not a fan of this rule. I think there's more negatives than positives to the DH issue. Just make the DH universal. Stop pitchers from hitting. Keep them in the whole game. If you want to increase offense, you want designated hitters. And I want starters to stay in games longer. The part of the DH rule that I like is it would hopefully force managers to keep starters in longer and would prevent the bullpen games. That's a good part of the rule, but I think the negatives outweigh the positives in that particular issue. And I think there are probably other ways to keep starters in the game longer and other fixes for that rather than this DH rule. All right, time for your stat of the week. On Wednesday night this week, Carlos Rodon of the White Sox came within two outs of a perfect game. What a great story. A guy who was one of the top picks in baseball a few years ago, has dealt with a ton of injuries. Was a left-hander that one of the guys I had on my list for the Phillies to potentially go out and get. Nearly pitched a perfect game. He eventually did record the season's second no-hitter, two in the same week. Remember, Joe Musgrove of the Padres pitched that franchise's first no-hitter over the weekend last weekend. Rodon lost his perfect game on a hit batter, by the way, with two outs left to go. The last time a major leaguer lost a perfect game in the ninth inning on a hit-by-pitch was Max Scherzer back in 2015 when, with just one strike left, he grazed the Pirates' Jose Tabata on his elbow pad to end the perfect game bid. So that's one of your stats of the week. The other is, did you know it's been 8 seasons since Major League Baseball last had a perfect game? The last perfect game was thrown by Felix Hernandez of the Seattle Mariners on August 15th, 2012, against the Tampa Bay Rays in a game Seattle won 1-0. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Brian Salvatore for coming on the podcast. Just want to remind you that Justin and Liz will have a new episode of Continued Success coming your way on Friday, and that we've got some new stuff on the Hittin' Season Patreon that you're going to want to check out. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season and sign up on one of those tiers to get all of the extra bonus content. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.